It is draft week. The NBA finals are over and the offseason is in full swing in the NBA. So I am going to predict the headlines that we will hear about the Suns here on this Monday. Join us, Locked On Suns. Let's go.
You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We are back. This is Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I'm your host, Brendan Kleen, a credentialed media member covering the Suns for the past five seasons and a writer at Dime Magazine and Suns.com. A big thank you for making Locked On Suns your first listen today and every day. Things are about to get crazy. They are about to hit the fan, and this is going to be a fun week, so I appreciate all of you joining me. Also, don't say this often enough, give us a follow on Twitter if you're there, at LockedOnPHXSuns, or me, at BrendanKleen14. Let's get to it. The draft is in 3 days. Rumors are going to start flying since the finals are now over. I am of the belief that the NBA reporters have had some stuff up their sleeves for a while, and they just don't say it because it's not the right time. And now it is the right time. So we will follow every single step. But I'm going to predict the headlines that we will hear from a Suns perspective in just a sec. Today's show, guys, brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline has you covered all year long with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline, where the game starts. More from BetOnline here in just a moment. But predicted headline number one. Quote, you can see it. You can see it in Bleacher Report or Hoopsype or wherever you get your news. Reddit. NBA teams wonder where the market for Ayton actually is. We still don't have concrete reporting on NBA teams that are all that interested in DeAndre Ayton. I'm not saying nobody is, but even now, we're going to get into the Portland, the Atlanta, the Indiana, and the Detroit stuff as it pertains to Ayton, the latest news, the opportunities, the possibilities there. But even those teams, we've now heard the Trailblazers are not interested. I'm not sure the Hawks are interested. But we, on the positive side of that, we have not heard a whole lot. I think if we do not hear of at least one team soon that is certainly positively going to offer Ayton a max, there will start to be that chatter of, is there actually one for him out there? Because it's just been sort of, well, we had the beginning of the offseason where it was like, will the Suns bring him back? Was all the stuff that happened during and after Game 7 real? Then it started to feel like, okay, that seemed to be real. What does that mean? And now we're sort of to the, yes, it definitely seems like the Suns are willing to part ways with Ayton. But we still haven't had that key ingredient of who in the heck is actually wanting to give him a max. It's just a lot of speculation and conjecture based on who has the cap space, who needs a center, etc. Which brings us to predicted headline number two, straight from my brain to the internet news machine. Quote, imagined again, right there, big bold headline. Ayton suitors to Suns, find a deal. And this is along the lines with the first one. If Detroit or Indiana or mystery cap space team X does indeed love Ayton, this is sort of assuming we do find that one team, but it happens to be a team that actually just has cap space or can create cap space pretty easily. If I'm those teams, why make a trade? And this is actually where it might benefit the Suns a little bit to start leaking, to start playing the game, so to speak. Unless they already are, and I don't doubt that they are. But leaking and playing the leverage game a little bit more than they have. I wouldn't be surprised if starting this week, we maybe hear some form of pushback on the Suns end. I'm not sure what form that takes. They've been hesitant to do that in the past, but the Suns would be, if they don't get public with it, is what I'll say, because that's one option. If they choose to be behind the scenes, they do still need to be aggressive here, because this is where it would help them, it would serve them well, to go out and find potential Ayton suitors. And look, this is all technically tanking. I don't frankly care. We know what happens, right? Go find a potential suitor for Ayton that doesn't have cap space, like Charlotte or the Knicks, to drum up interest in Ayton a little bit, sort of get those waves rippling. Find trade packages themselves, the Suns just going out and being proactive and finding something that appeals to them, and then help to avoid the, and I don't think that they're dumb enough for this to happen, but still, it's worth saying, don't let a team just link up with Ayton on day one and sign him to an offer sheet and then blindside you. It would be incredibly difficult to be blindsided at this point, considering it's been staring the Suns in the face since last October, and if not then, since the end of May. We're almost a month since Game 7 now, or maybe it is about a month since Game 7. It would be hard to get blindsided, but you just don't want to leave anything up to chance. You don't want to leave any stone sort of unturned or underlooked at, and then all of a sudden it surprises you when you get a call from Ayton's agent saying, hey, we're signing an offer sheet with Detroit. If you want to match it, you can. If you want to talk to them about a sign and trade, you can, but that's where we want to go. And then you're screwed. You're stuck. So again, I want to remind everybody, this is why you saw James Jones after Game 7 doing damage control that day afterward. He wanted to strike a peaceful, calm tone and just kind of keep the leverage even. He didn't want to say something that made it seem like, yeah, we're done. Screw it. He's gone. I hate it. It's over. That whole period is a bygone era in Suns land. No, that would be dumb, because then it weakens your position in a trade negotiation. And then also, you also have to keep in mind, Jones is going to be the one working alongside Ayton's agent on all of this. Even if the Suns do decide they're done with Ayton, it's one of those weird things about a sign-and-trade. You can read the story. Zach Lowe actually just did a big story about the Durant-Wiggins sign-and-trade when KD went to Brooklyn. And it's these, like, very uncomfortable, difficult meetings of people who are facing down the departure of a great player, having to work with the opposing team who's poaching that player, and the agent who might have some acrimony toward the franchise that they're leaving, to figure something out in these very, very short windows of time. It is stressful, but you can't, if you're James Jones, be going out and saying things that are insulting or that weaken you. I just think the leaking behind the scenes might just help them a little bit, because I think we're going to get there pretty soon. Step one is teams wondering where the market is. Step two is, if we find out there's a market, okay, well then it's on the Suns. Hey, find a trader, we'll just sign this guy, right? So there you have it. Predicted headline number three, after Sarver punishment, Suns not expected to go into tax. And this one is a little bit of a downer to end on, but I think we need to prepare ourselves. I didn't want to do another whole thing on Sarver because I closed the week out last week with some Sarver talk and we haven't heard anything new. I don't have new thoughts on it, but it could be that by the time you hear this, there is already a release from the NBA or reporting around when that release might happen. Again, the finals over, the offseason fully here. It's time for this thing to happen. But let me specify as it relates to the offseason and the transactions that are facing the Suns down right now, okay? I have been the guy all along, as we've talked about Ayton, that has felt like it was an exaggeration of the truth to say that Sarver was absolutely not going to pay the tax. He has said on the record, in I believe a couple of different settings, and I know James Jones has spoken to a similar fact, which is Sarver is willing to go into the tax for a team that he believes can compete for a championship, which this one clearly can. He's done it before, which isn't acknowledged very often. I'm not defending Sarver here. I'm just trying to level set. The idea that the Suns were not wanting to sign Ayton this summer solely because they didn't want to go into the tax was a little bit silly to me from the jump. For one, a lot of the Ayton trade constructions could have potentially put the Suns into the tax in the first place. If they find a good quality player back for Ayton, which you would almost imagine they would have to based on the amount of money that player would need to make, and they extend Cam Johnson this summer, then next year, most likely, they will be in the tax anyway. Okay? So, that's all one part of this. Okay? It was never just about the tax. That said, setting aside all the fit and the personality stuff that we've discussed about Ayton and whether he will come back to the Suns or not, why are we still acting like Sarver is going to be hyper-involved in this decision? No matter what the Sarver punishment is, and it does seem pretty likely to me that he receives one, it turns the problem less a punishment, if it's a suspension for a year or something like that, if it's not forcing to sell it, if he keeps the team, whatever, even if that's the case, this turns the problem less into whether Sarver will spend and more about the fact that there's just nobody making those types of decisions right now at a really important time for the franchise. Okay, that's the problem. And I think that's going to be what gets talked about pretty quickly is if Sarver's not available to be doing what needs to be done day to day, it's hard for me to imagine the green light coming for James Jones to go out and spend a bunch of money. All right, let's do an update on all things Ayton in terms of destinations. Portland out, Atlanta in, or maybe they're just in for Rudy Gobert. We'll break all of that down next. First, today's show brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online remains your one-stop shop for all things sports betting, including news, analysis, podcasts, the latest odds, props, and lines, of course, across all leagues, including this year's NHL playoffs, Stanley Cup Final, and the baseball regular season, plus lots of props on destinations for certain players, including DeAndre Ayton, who I am going to find. I believe the Suns were at the top. Let's see here. Basketball futures, NBA futures, championship, NBA draft, NBA. They have taken it down. Wow. BetOnline they know there's too many Suns fans listening here, and they're nervous. We do have the 2023 NBA championship odds. The Suns are plus 950, the Nets plus 800, the Mavericks plus 1200. It's a little crazy to try to bet before free agency, but you can get some really good odds if you feel good about something either happening transaction-wise or you just really like a team already. I even like the Clippers at plus 750. If they're healthy, they should probably just be the favorites based on talent, and they have one of the better coaches in the NBA. So that is all there at BetOnline throughout the summer. BetOnline remains the best spot for sports scores, podcasts, and news to inform your betting all year long. Head to the website today, that's betonline.net, or use your mobile device to learn more about the latest trends and action. BetOnline, where the game starts. News out of Portland late last week and Atlanta. We'll break each part down here as we whittle our list of potential Ayton suitors down over time. Take all of this with a grain of salt, I will just say, because again, we don't know for sure who is actually over the moon about offering Ayton a max, and we don't actually hear much of anything about the Suns side of things ever. So keep this in mind, but it's pretty concrete, all things considered, in terms of one team that is not interested in Ayton, reportedly, and another team that seems to have its eye on a different prize. So considering it's not super close to the Suns, I actually trust it quite a good amount. Starting with Portland, Trailblazers do not appear as, quote, legitimate contenders to land Ayton. Portland is expected to re-sign center Yusuf Nurkic and are targeting the Toronto Raptors' OG Anunoby as a trade target, though there are other potential directions as well. This is from Jake Fisher at Bleacher Report, who has been on the case. I feel like I've said Jake Fisher 100 million times since the offseason started, but what are you going to do? He has been on top of this stuff. So, to me, this is not much of a surprise. I think the Blazers, all along, I have said two things about them. One, from a trade standpoint, was Eric Bledsoe was going to be the most likely guy to move in a trade like this. He could have then been cut by the Suns because he was only partially guaranteed, so that would just be, I don't know what you're getting at that point. And of course, him actually coming here and playing was never going to happen, so it wasn't the only construction. I think you maybe could have done something with Norm Powell. I'm not sure, but it never made a ton of sense to me to make that trade. The Ayton side of this, too, was a little bit confusing because he would have been playing a fairly identical role to what he did in Phoenix. You know, Damian Lillard's not a traditional pick-and-roll point guard in terms of, like, you know, drive and kick, all that type of stuff. He's more of a score-first player. He is used to playing without the ball in his hands a little bit, but I don't really know what Chauncey Billups' offensive system is like, and never in terms of having a big man be like the focal point. I don't know if Ayton needs to be the focal point, but playing with somebody who wants to have the ball as much as Lillard didn't seem like a ideal place to go if I'm DeAndre Ayton. Atlanta is the other team we've gotten an update on that makes me feel like they are not quite as likely to pursue Ayton. Now, I did a big ranking. I did the top five Ayton suitors, I believe maybe Monday of last week. And I talked about Atlanta a little bit, but I wanted to add more here. If Gobert is moved, the Hawks figure to be one of the teams most likely to land his services per Jake Fisher. Quote, there has been plenty of talk among league personnel that some combination of Capella, John Collins, Kevin Huerter, and the number 16 pick could be routed to Utah for the three-time defensive player of the year. So, a couple things here. Just to explain why maybe this is coming, why Atlanta would target Gobert over Ayton, basically. The deal is a little bit easier to do for the Hawks. You know, you're seeing Capella, John Collins, Kevin Huerter. There's no third team required. I also think you could imagine Danilo Gallinari, who makes a similar amount of money to Collins, or Bogdan Bogdanovic, who is about the same as Capella, being candidates here in this deal. And if some of those guys could also be candidates to be dealt for Ayton, but you would likely see a third team. In this case, there wouldn't need to be one because there's no restricted free agency. There's none of that base year compensation weirdness with regard to the math of the trade, which is very complicated, and I've broken it down before, so I won't bore anybody with it today. The Hawks can also send out this year's 16th pick in a trade because of the timing. Gobert is just a member of the Utah Jazz, so a trade for him is just a trade. A trade for Ayton is a sign-and-trade, and it requires you to go to free agency with it, sign him to an offer sheet, and then figure it out from there. That is a different situation, and so you can have the 16th pick go out. Gobert could just get traded on draft night. He could get traded on Tuesday, Monday, whatever. He could get traded as I'm recording this episode. And also, I think Gobert is a little bit more of a sure thing, in theory, than Ayton. Gobert knows his role. He is in his prime. And, you know, as a defensive player, on both ends of the floor, you just know what he is. And that might appeal to the Hawks to get somebody who's a consistent B+, A- overall player versus Ayton, who, you know, in the Mavs series, for most of it, games 3 through 7, was a C+, B-. And at his best, he's maybe an A or an A+, but you don't get that all the time. I could see that mattering to Atlanta a little bit as well. I still sort of feel like Ayton is a better value than Gobert because he's younger and cheaper, but there's also the matter that Gobert is maybe a little bit of a flashier pickup for a team that seemingly always has that kind of mandate to make improvements. And last but not least here on the Atlanta side, I'm not ruling this out because if they didn't get Gobert, if they couldn't find anything that made sense with Utah, I think they could easily just move on to talking to the Suns about Ayton. But the last thing I will say is just like Portland, and Charlotte, this was going to be a team where Ayton was going to fill a very similar role to what he's been in Phoenix. I feel like a broken clock there a little bit, but broken record, sorry. That is just the case. I think if Ayton is wanting to leave, going somewhere where he's just getting, you know, his 12 shots a game and is being asked to rebound and defend and finish, I don't know what really would excite him about that outside of maybe just really wanting to get out of Phoenix, you know? Okay, lastly, Indiana back in and a closer look at Jeremy Grant. First, a quick reminder to make sure you're listening to the Ultimate NBA Mock Draft. Part one went up on every team podcast feed around the Locked On NBA Network, so you can check this feed. And then go subscribe to the actual Ultimate NBA Mock Draft feed where they go picks 1 through 30. Everybody made a pick. There's trades. There's surprises. There's explanations and breakdowns of all of it. It is a really, really highly great produced thing that we do every year. And I've loved listening to it every year. And you learn a lot. The Indiana Pacers reportedly could dangle center Miles Turner in a deal. And some in the NBA believe that to be a possibility because the two big men share an agency. Now, this is again a lot of conjecture and speculation. I don't always feel like there's a lot when Jake Fisher, who this report was also from, starts to talk in those terms. It is just things that other people who are not the Pacers or the Suns are saying about a potential trade. So keep that in mind, but it's worth noting, I think, that some NBA executives seem to actually believe that Turner is available in the first place, which is different than what we had last heard, which is Mark Stein saying outright that Indiana was not interested in trading Turner. So I believe that Stein, because he is usually right with everything, he's a little bit less throw stuff out there and see what sticks than some places than some people are, and he tends to get the stuff that he does go out with pretty correct. But all he was saying in that report was he just hadn't heard much chatter about Turner. This makes you think there is some chatter. So with that said, the deal works straight up, actually. It's one of the only ones that does. You could just do Miles Turner for DeAndre Ayton. Miles Turner is on an expiring contract, but he's considerably cheaper than the max, first year of the max that Ayton would be on next year. He's about $13, $14 million cheaper than that. And if the Suns made this trade and everything else basically stayed the same, they moved on from JaVale McGee, they moved on from, you know, Aaron Holiday, whatever, but they kind of kept everything else and then signed guys to minimums or, you know, something like that, they would get under the tax. There's also, obviously, you could get rid of Torrey Craig, you could get rid of Dario Saric or something like that. I'm not saying that would be the only moves, but just for the sake of consideration, Ayton for Turner and everything else stays the same, the Suns are out of the tax, okay? Just as you hear these rumors, that is an important part of it. Christian Wood. I want to talk about Jeremy Grant. I'll talk about a little. I did some more homework on him, and I want to dig into that a little bit deeper to close out the show. But people were worried, I think, that the Christian Wood trade from Houston to Dallas last year, which was basically a bunch of expiring contracts, and then this year's, I think, 26th or 27th pick in the first round, that it depleted DeAndre Ayton's value. I want to go through quickly this part of it. So Christian Wood has never been a positive defender or part of a winning team. His free agency market, the contract they ended up signing in 2020, was a lot lower than expected. And I don't think that should be ignored. That was an opportunity for teams to go out and bid for him, to try to get him on their team and bring him into their system. And they didn't seem that interested. He went for a lot less than was expected. I think people were grading this trade based on what Wood could be for Dallas. If he's at his best and Luka makes him better and he commits to defense under Jason Kidd and this and that, rather than what his market actually is, what his value actually is. I think getting a first was solid. Not amazing for Houston. Devontae Graham was an assign-and-trade last year. It was a assign-and-trade. It's not exactly the same thing, but we didn't see a lot of first-round picks move. I don't know if there were a lot of examples before last year's draft, but Devontae Graham was traded for a first last year, but it became 2 seconds. Lauri Markkanen, the pick that he was traded for still has not conveyed, but it's likely to. So those players are probably both a little bit worse than Christian Wood, but those guys didn't get a guaranteed first. In theory, it could still become a second or a late first similar to this. So it's not like the Rockets knocked it out of the park, but I don't think it was quite as bad as it was being talked about. And lastly, I just think this doesn't impact the Ayton market very much because of all the stuff that I'm saying and the fact that it doesn't include restricted free agency or a sign-and-trade. I actually think the Graham and the Markkanen deals are much more indicative if you're looking at value. So I don't think the Wood thing, just because he's a center or is a big man, whatnot, that this should change a whole lot, okay? So with all that said, let's get to Jeremy Grant. Two catch-all stat metrics graded him as a positive defender last year, which is a good sign, something that I didn't realize until I went and looked it up. However, all three labeled him as a negative offensive player. So Jeremy Grant would be the obvious candidate to change teams in an Ayton sign-and-trade with the Detroit Pistons. And I think that you would maybe say, okay, well, why would the Pistons trade their best player and pay a whole bunch of money just to get DeAndre Ayton? And the answer is, he's on an expiring contract. They don't want to pay a whole bunch of money. And he's actually a pretty good fit salary-wise. The trade pretty much works straight up. I think the Suns might have to throw in something relatively small to make it work. A minimum player, something like that, just to get everything equal. But you could imagine that being appealing to the Pistons. They have no real need for Grant. I think that they were just trying to see, hey, what else do we have to spend our money on? Can he get a little bit better? Can he sell us some tickets? He's from the area, etc. They could just be ready to move on if they're getting more of a core piece like Ayton. Grant's also expiring. So like Turner, you might try to extend him as part of the trade, like Miles Turner. But the question is, with Jeremy Grant, can he continue to be a plus defender, which he's basically been since he broke through in the NBA at this point? Again, I kind of had this perception, hey, he was on the Pistons. They were a bad defensive team. How good could his defense have really been? But the metrics still liked it. And he was a good defender in Denver before that, good defender in Oklahoma City the season before that. So you would trust that would transfer, I would think. And then can he also then carry his added three-point volume, which he definitely made a point of doing in Detroit, and fit into an actual offensive system again rather than being the kind of end-all be-all like he was in Detroit, and be with the Suns as a second or third option? Because a player who can defend at a high level even in, you know, big-time moments and take a lot of threes and create, that's a pretty darn valuable player. But he's never done all of that at once. And you would be trusting, hey, when we bring him in with Booker and Bridges and Chris Paul, that'll benefit him just as much as it'll benefit the Suns, and he might rise to the occasion. A few other things about Grant, in terms of, like, if he's your starting four, what does that look like? One, you have this Jay Crowder, Cam John, you have a backlog, you have an overload at forward at that point. So you needed to figure something out. You know, are you trading Cam Johnson? Are you trading Jay Crowder? I don't know. Grant measured at 6'6.5 with the 7'3 wingspan when he was 20 heading into his draft. So that's a couple inches taller than Crowder, with better length, but you're still giving up size as a four in some matchups. People will remember, you know, he was getting back down and driven through by LeBron James in the bubble in those Western Conference Finals. You imagine that Lakers matchup where Crowder was not really able to corral Davis in the first round in last year's playoffs because he's just not big enough, right? And Grant would pose some of those same problems. So after digging through all of that and actually evaluating it a little bit more, I don't necessarily hate it as much as I had been saying I did, honestly, but I still just don't know if it fully moves the needle. The best case scenario of it moves the needle, but you're also going to have to pay Grant, just like you're going to have to pay Ayton, and he's a little bit older, and the hardest part to get here in the NBA, the thing that the Suns need most, that's the most difficult to find, is shot creation. Consistent, late in a game, late in the clock, can you just get a bucket? And, you know, I don't know if that part of his game is going to show up at the highest possible level. He showed it a little bit in Detroit on a bad team, but on good teams, he's mostly been a 3-and-D type. So bringing in another guy who's like a little bit of a better Jay Crowder or a little bit of a better Cam Johnson, is that but you're decreasing what you have at the center spot. It's the questions that the Suns are obviously having to ask themselves about an Ayton sign-in trade. Is our team going to get substantially worse, or can we stay afloat? Can we rearrange the rest of the roster to make up for this? It's all going to have to happen. I just don't think Grant is the type of guy that single-handedly comes in an Ayton trade, and you just feel like, all right, we're good. We're going to keep hitting the ground running in 2023, and we're going to be right back where we want to be chasing a title. I don't know if that happens with a Ayton for Grant type of deal. That'll close things out today, guys, and I may be back for a bonus episode before I even know it. Before you even know it, I might be hitting this button to record once again, because I just have a feeling we're going to start to hear some crazy stuff. I just wanted to set the stage for all of it. Ayton, headlines, everything. So enjoy your Monday. We are close to a holiday weekend. I know that some of you probably have one this week. Arizonans mostly are not so lucky, but it'll be an entertaining week in the NBA to get us through. Thanks for making Locked On Suns your first listen. Now go make Locked On NBA Ultimate Mock Draft your second listen to catch up on all things draft.